So today's Perek B'Tanach is a lovely new beginning, Shoftim Perek Aleph. So we just concluded the tragic ending of Sefer Yehoshua, in which despite the acceptance upon themselves of a historical vision of the nature of the value of the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael, we end up with a Yehoshua who is old and no longer capable of doing anything, a nation that has become institutionalized and now is buying into basically organized religion, happily doing what they are always doing and not doing anything else. And even when Yehoshua dies, he's left without a proper hespet because people are too busy eating their delicious dates. Ish tachat gafno, tachat yinato, and nobody's going to bother coming to the funeral and be maspid. And this was the end, except that it was even worse. Because the last pasuk in Yehoshua made it clear that not only had the representation of Moshe disappeared, Aaron disappeared. Because Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen is the first time that we are miyachis him in that fashion, is as he dies. And so both Moshe and Aaron have disappeared, which has brought an end to the entire Yitziat Mitzrayim period, an end to the excitement of the Midbar, of the Knisa La'aretz, and so on. And what happens is, and this is brought out immediately, right at the opening, in the first two psukim, we basically are left without any type of central vision of what is going on. So Vayiacharei Mot Yehoshua. The first thing is that every time the word Vayahi, and this is no exception, as the Medrash points out, Vayahi is woe, miserable are we. And what is the Vayahi over here? And the simple meaning is, we just said that we buried him in Timnat Cheres. Timnat Serach, then we find it Timnat Cheres, depends if you read it Divrei Hayomim, you read it here. And as we said, they had made an actual image of the sun that was put on the kever of Yehoshua, as if to say, this was the man who was ma'amid at hachama. So what was the lashon vay? So the Medrash provides a mashal. Imagine a guy who had been attacked by an entire pack of lions and manages to come out on top. And then when they bury him, years later they put a picture of his victory over the lions. And everybody who comes by says, this was a guy who was a hunter of lions, and here he lies in his grave. So too, and that's a vine. So too, Yehoshua, here is a man that could stop the sun and lies in a grave. How absurd. That's the simple meaning. The deeper meaning, of course, is that the Vayihi is that Yisrael ritzoakim, oi, mi aselenu milchama, which is strange because Yehoshua was no longer doing the milchama. So the next pasuk actually makes it clear. And the continuation makes it clear. Vayishalu b'nei Yisrael badunai lemor, mi ya'ale lanu el ha'kna'ani b'tchila lilachem bo. We never had anybody asking the Lord, which of course means to go to the Urim v'Tumim. Until now, we made decisions, and we did what we needed to do. We had tacticians, we had somebody who's taking responsibility. All of a sudden, we're asking for guidance. Excuse us, Lord, but what now? So the first pasuk immediately between the vay and between the me and going to ask the Urim V'Tumim, you get a sense of loss. We're lost. We have no idea what we're doing. Now the truth is, nobody was supposed to be asking, were they? I mean, every shevet had been left to do its job. Unfortunately, the first perek is going to recapitulate some of the issues that had already been discussed in Yehoshua, because it serves as a segue. And the reason that it serves as a segue is to show us right at the beginning the breakdown between the attitudes of Yehuda and the attitudes of the Aseres HaShvatim, on the other hand. And what happens is that that difference, the willingness to engage and to continue the kibush, is maintained by Yehuda and is completely lost by the other Shvatim. And as we know, as the Gemara says, you know, it's Maya Dediyumsi, it's called Aseres HaShvatim. There's just too much fun. There were too many vacations. There was too much hot springs. There was a lot of fun for the Aseres HaShvatim, and it destroyed them. And it's basically today's Gemara. While you were eating your delicious little figgies and dates, we were doing work, serious work. And so the question over here is understood as, look, we know there's no longer a national army, but there is a nation. Nation means that there's going to be geopolitical implications to whatever is done. If somebody fails at doing the nachla for their own shevet, the implications are going to be borne by everybody, because it's just going to give the Kenanim a different sense of what they're up against. So therefore, we want to know, okay, so who should go first that has more of an opportunity to define the way that the Yerusha will go? Vayomer Adonai, Yehuda Ya'aleh. The one to go first is Yehuda, as always. Yehuda were the ones who jumped into the Yam. It's Yadcha Ba'oref Oivecha. It's Yehuda that's Rishon L'Degalim. They're the ones who always travel first. And this is Yehuda Ya'aleh, becomes the vision of David Abdi Nasi Lehem La'olam Latid Lavo. So that too is Yehuda Ya'aleh. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let them go. And he will be the first to go, Batchilat Lilachem. And I tell you right now, Hinei Natati Et Ha'aretz B'yado. I'm gonna make him succeed. Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon Achiv, Aleiti begorali v'nilchama b'knani, v'alachti gamani itcha begoralecha, v'yelech ito Shimon. And so, Yehuda asked Shimon to participate. And as we know, Yehuda and Shimon basically were mixed, the Nachalas were mixed. Shimon was scattered areas between the Nachala of Yehuda, as we saw in Yehoshua. And here we see that Yehuda took responsibility to get Shimon into the fight with him as well. He promised Shimon, we'll do it together. So the areas that were initially set aside for Yehuda will all be taken over by just jointly, and that way we'll have the Nachala that was initially one piece of Nachala. And indeed, Vayelchita Shimon. Now what's interesting is, is that actually Otniel ben Knaz is called in Divrei Hayomim Yehuda Achi Shimon. And Rashi brings over here that it is possible that we are referring here to Otniel ben Knaz when we say Yehuda Ya'aleh. And that Shimon Achiv is Shimon Achiv. Because in that one individual, in his relationships, as we already saw, we're going to review it with the story of Dvir and Kiryat Sefer, that one individual represented the powerhouse of the reconstruction of what was lost. And that's exactly what happened here. Everything was lost. And that ties right back into the opening pasuk of Vayehi, the lashon of Tzar. Acharei mot Yehoshua, why, asks the matter. Why mention again Acharei mot Yehoshua if we just finished reading that in Yehoshua? Ah, to tell me, Vizorach HaShemesh, Uba HaShemesh, right? So again, what's the Vizorach HaShemesh, Uba HaShemesh? Ad shelo kafta shimshol she Moshe, Zorach shimshol she Yehoshua. But here too it's true. Ad shelo kafta shemesh she Yehoshua, so that means that Otniel, the first of the Shoftim, is merumes of the first Pasek, in which case Rashi is justified in recognizing that the way Divrei Hayomim identifies Otniel ben Knaz with three ways. He's Yavet, he's Otniel, and he's Yehuda Umashmo, as the Gemara says, Yehuda Achi Shimon. This is Yehuda Achi Shimon. So we're talking really about the beginning of the Tkufa of the Shoftim, even though actually Yehoshua is still alive. And that's the Vayehi. We need to know that in this period, there was already Otniel growing, so that when Yehoshua would die, there would be somebody to take his place. So this was the remez now to he who would be the first of the Shoftim. And so Vayal Yehuda, and Yehuda actually went and attacked. Vayitein Adonai atak na'ani v'aprizibi adam v'yakum bevezek aseret alafim ish. So the first attack was the city of Vezek, which would be a great place to attack, because it's basically Abu Dis. So in other words, the area that we have is right outside of Yerushalayim, by the road to Yericho today, and that is Bezek, right where Bezek antenna is today. So they went and they took over Bezek. Oh, we know, baby. Vayakum bevezek aseret alafim ish. And they destroyed 10,000 soldiers in Bezek. They found the master of Bezek. Now, since Bezek was basically in what was called the Artsot Yerushalayim. Now, Artsot Yerushalayim indeed went all the way through the Jerusalem corridor of today. And the Bezek area was part of that Jerusalem corridor. As we'll see, they went directly from Bezek to Yerushalayim, dragging Adoni Bezek with them. No, it's the south, actually, more.
South.
Yeah, Bezek itself is slightly towards Yericho to the east, but it's
southeast,
yeah. And so they found this guy, Adoni Bezek, and they took him, and Vayaku etaklani vetaprizi. Now this posik, hey, is going back to explain Pasuk Dalet. In other words, we first tell you the overall story. The overall story is they got 10,000 people, but, I mean, it's not so simple. They went there, they found Adoni Bezek in Bezek, but he had escaped. So they were fighting him, and there were Canaanite priests there. That was the 10,000 people. And then Vayanos Adoni Bezek, the master of the town, got away. Vayirdefu acharav, they ran after him, and they caught him. And Vayikatsetsu et bohonot yadav v'raglav, they cut off the thumbs and toes, only the thumb and the large toe of his feet. Now, of course, this is weird, but it's not all that weird when you remember that the Torah has something of a fixation on large toes and thumbs, right? Now, because that's what we always do. I mean, we're always sprinkling dam, sprinkling shemen, tire of the mitzvah, the nevi'im. I mean, this is obviously a very important nekuda. So we could have said if it was only the thumb, that it was simply a minhag to make sure that a guy was unable to use his weapon. If he no longer had his thumb, so then he couldn't hold his sword. But, and that indeed was the minhag, in many places they would cut off a thumb. But to cut off the toe is a different issue. Yeah, it's interesting, Rip Joey had this beautiful insight, that Lamaisa, the most telling issue of among primates, of the difference between humans and other primates, is the way in which many primates have opposable thumbs, almost by definition. But the power of the opposable thumb in all of its positioning is only human, and the growth of a large toe is what allows walking like a human, so that you can balance yourself standing upright, which other primates don't do. So in being mekatzets bohen yad v'regel, you're turning the person into an ape, basically. And this is what Adoni Bezek did. The reason they did this to him was to teach him a lesson, as we'll see. He understood the lesson and appreciated it. So, and he's Vayomer Adoni Bezek. You know, this is really wild. Shivim melachim bohanot yideim v'ragleim mekutsatzim hayu melaktim tachat shulchani. You know, this was like my favorite activity, which is obviously why they did this to him. So he would capture kings and cities, and he would cut off the guys just to turn him into an ape. So much turned him into an ape that they were scurrying around under my table for table scraps. And this was my entertainment at reducing my enemies to basically being little scurrying monkeys. And now, kasher asiti kein shilem li Elohim. It's pretty good. Mida kenegan mida. So what I did to them, God has finally paid me back. I knew they would catch up to me one of these days. But what can you do? Vayeviyu Yerushalayim vayomotsham, which is remarkable because, we know that we call the master of we have Adoni Tzedek, or, you know, so Adoni Bazak could be an indication of his connection to Yerushalayim. But there's a beautiful medrash on this. And that is, this guy doesn't register on the list of the Melachim. So he must have been a small-time guy. So actually, we were never given, points out the Sifri, any indication of the level of power of the Malchei Kanaan. The only place where we can see it is where we captured a little boy. So we captured a little guy, he's got 10,000 soldiers, and he's captured 70 serious people that he's keeping in cages, and this is the guy that doesn't register. So this gives us the sense, is the way the Sifri puts it, which Rashi understands to be the lesson of the pasuk. Now they went capturing Yerushalayim. Lamaisa, there were no people left in Yerushalayim. They had already apparently run away. We don't see anything about population control here. But they were located Yerushalayim and burnt down the city. Now, we read later, of course, that it was impossible to capture Yerushalayim because of the Yavus. There's two possible explanations for this. One is that they left the city in ruins, and then the Yavus went and rebuilt it. Or the more reasonable explanation, which the Medrash itself goes through at length, is that there's a tremendous difference between Yerushalayim and Yavus. Yerushalayim is what we call the upper city. And actually the Medrash refers to it, Ha'ir Elyonah, which is where we're sitting. So we're sitting in the upper city, extending out to what is erroneously called Har Tzion over Gei Ben Hinnom. That area, as we spoke about, was the border between Binyamin and Yehuda. So the Gei Ben Hinnom area goes the real Mitzuda of the Yavus, which is the area that we call today Silwan, which was right under the Abu Dis and was under the Adoni Bezek's area. That part there was never an attempt to get that, as we're going to see, until later. The Pasuk is going to explain that. And anyway, Binyamin wasn't fighting here. This was Yehuda and Shimon Alpi, the Urim V'Tumim, that were supposed to be fighting. So they certainly weren't going to be dealing with the Yavus issue anyway at this point. Yeah. So at this point, we moved west to get to the area of the all the way in the Shvela by the Yam, and we moved now also south, going to the area of Hebron and towards the Negev. And so the first thing was, now this is an old story.
Yeah,
exactly, and as I said, we're going to, because of the fact that we're talking about the milchamot of Yehuda, specifically their personal milchamot, either with Kalev, initially this is Kalev, and at the end, Otniel ben Knaz, so we review it. And Vayelel Yehuda l'Kanaani ha'yoshev b'Hebron, but of course this creates the sense of transition and segue from the last words of Yehoshua into Shoftim. V'shem Hebron lefanim Kiryat Arba, v'yaku et Sheshai v'et Achiman v'et Talmai, and that was very significant, we're not going to go over it again, what the difference is between Kiryat Arba in the sense of Arba Anakim versus Kiryat Arba in the sense of Arba Zugot, which is the Zugiot, Zugiot, Hebron, and so on. And then Vayelech Mishama Yoshve Dvir, Veshem Dvir Lefanim Kiryat Sefer, was also, we found it called in Yoshua, Dana. So it's Dana, Kiryat Sefer, Dvir, which the Medrash, again, in the Sifri learns that these must have been names that were assigned by vying countries that had interests in that area, which again shows, we've seen this many times, the international interest in what was going on in Eretz Yisrael, much as it is today. Everybody has to have something to say, and everybody has to have some way of defining things here. So, you know, my kids used to always tell me when they were young, you know, I come off it. Like everything revolves around the Jews. Everything revolves around Eretz Yisrael. Because it hadn't happened yet. Then already in the 90s, they're saying, uh-oh, maybe this is true. Now this is insane. How could this be? That's exactly what was going on at the time. So Vayomer Kalev, and this too happened in Yoshua. Vayomer Kalev asher yaket kiryat sefer uchada v'natati lo et achsa biti leisha. We went through the whole explanation of achsa, what happened between achsa and Otniel ben Knaz. Listen to it back in Yoshua. So vayilkeda Otniel ben Knaz achi Kalev akaton mimenu. As the Medrash points out, it's a pretty risky thing to say whoever is locate kiryat sefer, I'm going to give him my daughter. I mean, come on, who might that be? This is one of the occasions where God answered the guy correctly, even though they didn't say it Kohogan. But the truth is, the way Chazal understand Kiryat Sefer, meaning that this was an intellectual victory, and there'd be no way to actually conquer the city of Dvir without being able to conquer in your mind first the nature of Kiryat Sefer, which is Halachot, so that you had to be an immense bucky to be able to physically battle. And this is always true in terms of Eretz Yisrael, different areas are challenging in different mental ways, not only in physical ways. So it was Otniel ben Knaz, who was Achi Kaleva Katon Mimenu, only from the mother, actually, they were related. We say Churge de Knaz, and so on. Vayiten lo et achsa bito leisha. And so she wasn't too happy with this choice of a husband, because he was this great shofet and gadol who didn't know anything about life. And she didn't like that, because he was only interested in learning all day long. And he didn't own anything. And so vayibivoah. So, I mean, she now is coming, you know, and she's gonna come to her husband's house and find that they don't even have a new fridge. So she persuades this guy who never had interest in anything in his life. All of a sudden, he's gotta have some businesses, you see. So she gets him to agree that she's gonna ask her father, which has a double meaning of braying, which the Gemara says. Well, she told her father, look, you know the way a chamor brays when it doesn't have food? Well, that's what women do. So I want action. So Kalev says, well, what's the problem over here? Malach. But Tomerlo, what do you mean malach? Havali bracha, give me something. Keretz HaNegev netatani, what'd you give me? You gave me this guy. I mean, he's a great guy, you know, and everything. I'm very proud of him. But there's nothing in the house. The Negev means wiped off, you know. Venatatali gulod mayim. I insist. Well, you gave me mayim, which is Torah. So Otniel was just pure Torah. What am I supposed to do with gulot mayim? Vayiten laKalev et gulot ilit veit gulot tachtit. This, of course, is the Midrashic interpretation. So Kalev said, okay, so not only can you have the upper gulot of the mayim of Torah, we'll get this guy started. And so Otniel, as the Gemara explains, was able to be the one guy who could tell God, either business success and no headaches or bust. And immediately HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him what it is that he desires. But all of this is because of Achsa. So you never know what a nagging wife can achieve. Uvnei king.
His mother and his wife, he really...
He really had it. He was totally defined by women. I guess we better be careful. Too many women listen to this. That's it. Naftali's worried, Nick.
That's the song. Married girls like the girl who married to old man. From one step to the next.
Uvnei keni choten Moshe. Now here is a strange interlude in which we discover the interrelationship of the Bnei Yitro and what turns out to be Otniel ben Kenaz. As we've been talking about Otniel ben Kenaz, and this is why we suddenly switch to the story of the Keni. Now Yitro, of course, was the exact opposite of Achsa. Achsa was only interested in, you know, she's proud of her husband, but she's got to have some business success. The Keni, as we know from Yitro, had a life full of business success. That's not what it's all about. They were the ones that had been Moshe Nefesh to be able to come and to learn from Moshe and from Klal Yisrael. And indeed, as Moshe says to him, you know what, bring the family, we'll come into Eretz Yisrael, and even though you don't have a chelek and nachal in Eretz Yisrael because you're a family of gerim, but we're going to take good care of you. So what they did was they gave Doshna Shel Yericho to the Bnei Keni to be able to live off of the leftovers of that wonderful area, and they were not going to take it for anybody until the Beit HaMikdash would be built. So they said, look, we're setting this aside. We don't know where that Beit HaMikdash is. So whatever Nachala, whatever Shevet is ends up now giving their land for that, they're going to take Doshna Shel Yericho. Meanwhile, let the Keni settle there. So then what happens? They were sitting there as long as Yoshua was alive. They were perfectly happy because they were able to learn from Yoshua. But this is Vayachrimot Yoshua. Now they have nobody to learn from. So they say, we didn't come here to plant. We didn't come here to get rich. There's other places to invest, believe me. So we're here to learn. Where do we go? So they suggested to them that they move to Otniel ben Kenaz. That's why we find them called later in Divrei HaYamim. So the Vnei, these were the Vnei Keni ended up being the Sukkosiyim, Tiratiyim. Tiratiyim means Yoshvei Shar. Sukkoti means Balei Ruach HaKodesh. So these were all the children of Yonadav ben Rechav, who was of the Keni, who refused to settle down and get used to his little kafniot and fun times. And they, Dafkar, held up later as being, this is what you should be like, people who really care and are passionate. So there it says that they went away indeed, and here they're Olu Mi'irat Marim is their best place to be. But they're not going to live in the Irat Marim. It's too good. And instead they went to Midbar. So they were living originally at Bnei Yehuda, Midbar Yehuda Asher Benegev Arad. And instead they moved to the Midbar because that was the area where Otniel ben Kenaz was teaching. Vayelech Vayeshev et Ha'am, obviously says the Medrash, there's an Am, there must have been a heck of a lot of people, the Mechilta points this out. If you need to point out that they were sitting with the rest of the people, it means this was a massive institution. Otniel ben Kenaz is teaching, and they joined the masses that were learning with Otniel ben Kenaz, and that's why we stick this in over here as a result of the death of Yehoshua and the taking over of Otniel.
So why did they leave?
Because it was too good.
It was their own initiative.
It was too good, and there was no learning. What's the point?
So they went from being farmers to being shepherds?
Perhaps, or to living as it says. They lived in motorhomes. That's what it's called, Ben Rechav, you know, the Ben Rechav. Yeah, exactly. Vayelech Yehuda et Shimon Achi vayaku et Haknani Yoshev Tzvat, not to be confused with the Tzvat of our days, of course, which is nowhere near Nachlat Yehuda. And vayacharim ota. And once again, vayikrat Shema Ir Chorma. I found that being used again and again. And the truth is, we found Beersheba being called Beersheba again and again. Beit El being called Beit El again and again. As the Rishonim point out, each time is an addition to the context, the spiritual context, the historical context, which you could see again and again the elements of what was going on in this place. Vayokod Yudat Azav et Gvula, vet Ashkelon vet Gvula, vet Ekron et Gvula. But, of course, Vayokod does not mean Lahorish. Right? So they captured it, but apparently they were unable or unwilling to take them over. But Vayadunayet Yudav Yorish et Ahar. Oh, yes. The har they were able to get, God was with them, but they were unable to be Yorish, the Yosheva Emek. So these areas along the coast and in the Emek, they were not Morish. So they were as yet incapable of facing the tanks of the enemies. They had the siyata d'shmaya to capture the cities and the mountains. Vayitnu lekalev et Chevron kasher diber Moshe. Vayorish misham et shloshet b'nei ha'anak, as already mentioned above. This again is reviewing, together with the new conquests, the conquests of Yehuda that we had during the time of Yoshua, almost. Vetayevusi yoshev Yerushalayim lohorishu b'nei Binyamin. Even though we just spoke about Yerushalayim being captured and burned by Yehuda, but the Yevus, who were the ones who were in the lower city of Yerushalayim, they were not Morish, and in fact, Vayeshev Ayevusiyet B'nei Binyamin B'Yerushalayim Ad Ayom Hazeh, Slohorishu B'nei Binyamin, is because, as the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar points out, because there was a promise that existed that didn't enable them, and this is basically part of the promise that Avram had made to the Yevusi at the time that he bought the Maharat HaMachpelah, Shelo Yechbeshu Yisrael et Ir Yevus. So when they wanted now to capture the Ir Yevus, they had put up these statues that had a copy of the contract, and therefore they were unable and unwilling to go ahead and to take over that area. Vayalu b'nei Yosef gam heim Beit El. B'nei Yosef went to Beit El v'adunahimam. Vayatiru Beit Yosef v'Beit El v'shema Ir lefanim Luz. And so they scouted it out. Now there was a big problem with Luz, because this was a Yatiroth Latura Ta'aret. Some say this is a reference back to the original Meraglim. They still had the information about the city. The problem with Luz is that it was a secret city. It was completely surrounded by natural outcroppings. You couldn't see it from the outside, and there was no gate. And they called it Luz because it turned out that the entrance to the city was through a tree. It's very Tolkien. So it was a Luz tree. So they had hollowed this out, and they were able to get in, and they were completely cut off from the outside world. This Luz, as the Gemara says, was so cut off from the outside world that Nebuchadnezzar came. He never found it. All of the enemies that had ever captured Eretz Israel never found Luz, never destroyed Luz, and it remains untouched even by the Malach HaMavet. So therefore, then the Gemara says, well, that's crazy. If nobody ever dies there, they must go bananas. How do you end up not dying? Well, when we wanted to die, you had to leave town, says the Gemara. Amazing. Right? So this was a place, and this, of course, is all types of mystical associations. This is the Luz, is the piece of the skeleton that the Goyim also recognizes, was considered to be the bone that never decays, you know, from which the body is rebuilt at Tchiyat HaMetim. They still call it the sacrum. Sacrum area is called sacrum because it's sacred. It's sacred because of the Luz, because it remains Kadesh. And that's actually the makar of the Latin word for it, right? Yeah. So the Luz has a long history, and these Meraglim were unable to get into the city. So they staked it out. And so one day somebody came out. They couldn't see where he came out from. So if you show us how to get in, we will repay you. So he shows them how to get in. They provided protection from him, a witness protection program, and they relocated him. Which had the same characteristics of the original Luz and was never touched. Hushma adayom hazeh. So this was the good part of the story, in which the Bnei Yosef, Bnei Yehuda, initially, just like they were the ones, if you recall, in the beginning of the Yerusha, were the ones who were meant to be the protected areas, the south, Yehuda Ladarom, Yosef Latzafon, and everybody else being protected, because that was one Yerusha you could count on. So the one Yerusha you could count on were these two Shvatim. Among them took Shimon and Binyamin, but Lemaisa, they were the only ones that continued the path of Yehoshua. So that the closing words of Yehoshua were indeed put into action by Yehuda and Yosef. But now when we move on to the other Shvatim, V'lohorish menashet Beit Shan v'et benoteha, v'et Ta'anach v'et benoteha, v'et Yoshvei Dor v'et benoteha, v'et Yoshvei Yivla'am v'et benoteha, v'et Yoshvei Megiddo v'et benoteha, and indeed Vayoel Aknani l'shevet ba'aretz hazot, and Vayoel is a lashon of Shvua. Vayoel Moshe was Nishba, which means that they came to an agreement. Vayhi ki chazak Yisrael Yeah, like we saw earlier, when you had enough power, Vayasem et Hakanani Lamas, you could make them accept the Shilton of Yisrael and pay tax. But Horish lo Horishon, they never took over the areas, despite the fact that they could have, because they had turned them into a mas. Ephraim also, Ephraim lo Horish et Hakanani Hayoshev Begazer, Vayeshev Hakanani Bekirbo Begazer. So there's Muvlaot, these were cities that remained Knani cities in the middle. Zvulun, lo rishit yoshvei Kitron, v'yet yoshvei Nahalal, v'yeshav ha-Kanani b'kirbo, v'yu lamas. The contradiction of allowing the Kananim to be there, and v'yoel, that they're allowed to be there, and all we want is for you to pay your taxes, is outrageous, as we're going to see in the very beginning of the next parak. Osher, lo rishit yoshvei Akko, v'yet yoshvei Tzidon, v'yet Achla, v'yet Achzi, v'yet Chelba, v'yet Afik, v'yet Rechov. You could look at your map that we have so kindly provided you, and see where these are all located, but you've already basically seen these areas in the maps of the Eretz HaNisheret. Vayesheva or Sheri b'kerav HaKanani Yoshev Eretz, Kilo Orisho. It's outrageous. So there's Shevet Osher, basically themselves, move out within the Kanani. Naftali lo Orishet Yoshvei Beit Shemesh, Vet Yoshvei Beit Anat, Vayeshev b'kerav HaKanani Yoshvei Eretz. Yoshvei Beit Shemesh uBeit Anat Ayulam Lamas, and they still didn't do anything. And you know what? The Bnei Dan were pushed aside by the Amori. VaYolchetzu Amori et Bnei Dan Ahara Kilo Nitanol Eredet LaEmek VaYoel Amori LaShevet BaRcheres. This is, my gosh, the very place we're talking about. BaAyalon B'Shalabim, and there too VaTichpad Yad Beit Yosef, but we never Morish them. VaYulamas uGvul Amori MiMaale Akrabim. Miasela Vamala remained under, you'll remember we went through the map, Rabbanea showed us the very sharp Yeridah, called Maale Akrabim, from the point of the sharp ridge and above, all remained Emori area. Nobody ever did anything about it. And this was a Bechiyah L'Dorot, as we're going to see in the next Pasuk, actually.
Lamas is a reference specifically.